It's time for Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. For more information about Daniel Pryor and his services, visit BibleBasedCounselor.com. Daniel has offices in Kirkland and Edmonds. And now your host, Daniel Pryor.
Mark Holland along for the ride this week with Daniel Pryor, life coach and counselor. How you do there, Mr. Pryor?
I'm doing well, Mark, and how are you?
Really good. Good to have you in studio once again. Hey, this week we are tackling a subject that I'm not sure if we've specifically tackled this one before. Of course, this subject comes up in a number of different situations, but sexual trauma, causes and healing for sexual trauma.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I hope that sexual, by calling it sexual trauma, I could have said sexual molestation or something, but this is a broader net, and it's meaningful to a broader audience. You know, a lot of times there's a fallout from the parents' sexual history, which they may feel they've kept pretty well concealed, or maybe they feel that they had resolved it, and then they have a family and they have kids, and then the kids grow up, and then they start acting out in, you know, strange ways. It doesn't always have to be sexual ways. It can be a lot of depression, you know, and different things. They might get a diagnosis of obsessive compulsive, or they may just be...
You mean the child?
Yeah, the child. Yeah, they may just be defiant with authority, and different things like that, that are the fallout of things that the parents felt they had. Either they didn't realize they had the issue, or they felt they had resolved the issue.
Well, tell us about that story before we went on the air of the mother and son you were counseling, and what happened there.
Yeah, it was a kid that was really really defiant. He had gone through the school system, and he was kind of like one of the outcasts. And just before they kind of cut him loose,
he put him in prison.
put him in prison. Sadly, that may be true in a lot of cases. There is a kind of a system that kids go through, and after a while, they just, you know, the authorities just really feel like kid's going to probably wind up in prison. There's not much we can do about it. But he had a real anger problem. And a very disruptive way, anger problem. And he had just the foulest mouth for a kid his age. He was about 10 years old. Man, in talking to...
not even a teenager yet.
He was already well into a life of crime. And talking to the parent, the father had been out of the picture for a while, and I was asking, I can understand why your son is angry because of the history of the family, but I can't understand why he is so sexual. Was he molested? No. The answer was no. And she said, I asked my ex-husband, which seemed indicative that you would even have to ask your ex-husband but I asked my ex-husband and his new girlfriend, and if they had molested. No. We let it pass a couple sessions later, and I continually came back to this. You know, was he molested, or did your husband have pornography? I asked, no. And then finally, she said to me, well, of course he had pornography, but he kept it locked up. And the thing is that what a lot of people don't understand is it doesn't work that way. You pass on the values that you have, not the values that you wish you had or the values that you think you have. You pass on the values that you have. And so if this father, he could have had it, you know, in a safe behind a combination. But it would come out in the way he treated women, and it would come out in the way he treated his wife, and it would come out in the way he spoke, because it was his value. Mm. And that would come out in his son's life. So a lot of parents, when I say causes and healing of sexual trauma, I'm talking about that kind of thing too, not just molestation, because the values of parents have an impact on the children. So I want to talk about some of the causes, and then how to heal, because when that happens in a family, healing must take place.
So possible indicators of some kind of trauma in a person's life. Why don't you go through some of these
signs? Possible indicators or outcomes. And so these are some of the things, for example, that parents might notice in their children, which, and I want to stress this strongly, all caps, stress it strongly, that when I read these off and you see Junior has some of these things, it doesn't mean that the child was molested or that, but it does raise some suspicions, and you should kind of earmark this way. As a parent, I need to make sure that I'm taking care of myself, because you can't hide the values that you have. They're going to come out in the drinking water somehow. Mm-hmm. So I always have to be vigilant and always be correcting. Parents can never put life on autopilot and feel like they've taken care of all their business. But some of the indicators would be that some of the things that parents might see in the child, or the child, and when we're talking about child, we're talking about children up till 30 and whatever. You know, if you mm-hmm. got parents, you're a child. Sexual dysfunction or misconduct or deviancy. I think gender confusion, self-harm behavior, suicidal behavior, high risk and extreme behavior. There's a sense that some of these young people have. And when I say young people, again, this is not just teenagers or adolescents. This is where they—
College age, this, even.
Yeah, college age. And it has to be extreme behavior, mm-hmm. Dangerous behavior, driving dangerous, jumping out of a plane without a parachute, just extreme kinds of behaviors where this is an indicator that they've shut their sensitivity down at some point for some reason, and it takes a lot for them to feel life, let's say. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I'll even put it in those terms. Mm. You know, if it's not extreme, I don't feel it. Autistic behavior, isolation, pulling away from people, significantly disordered personalities. And we've talked about personalities and how that the core of a personality is a defense mechanism. And so a disordered personality would be a person who is very defensive and doesn't have a lot of friends and isn't socially comfortable. There are these personality disorders, and of course, I've differentiated between personality disorders and disordered personality. If you're interested in that, go to my website, BibleBasedCounselor.com. Over there in the podcasts, you can go down several pages in podcasts, and you'll find last year I did a couple of shows on personality and personality disorders, so you would go and check out that. But these would be paranoid, schizoid, schizotypical.
These could have their roots in sexual trauma.
Not always. And again, the sexual trauma doesn't have to be something that overtly happened to the young person. It could be mm-hmm. something, you know, they caught their parents having sex, which was never explained, or they caught they saw Playboy or some porn magazine around the house regularly as a child, mm-hmm. something that traumatized them in that way. Mm-hmm. And so it's like they're trying to get to their, fulfillment as an adult, and the bridge is out mm-hmm. because of this.
Well, let me ask you this, though. The obvious predicament that faces families today is the parents can be pretty clean and not really, don't indulge in any way, don't watch bad movies of any kind, are very protective of their children. And yet, because of the internet and cell phones and things, these things still are presenting themselves, mm-hmm. presenting, particularly I'm thinking of pornography, to the kids in their world. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of like, despite your best efforts, kids are getting exposed to pornography, and not just Playboy pornography, mm-hmm. but hardcore pornography mm-hmm. at younger and younger ages now. I can't imagine. There's something just traumatic about that to begin with.
There is. I don't think in the first generation it would result in a lot of the things we're talking about. These indicators that we've been talking about are really a broken spirit, and that's something that's been broken early in the child's if it was a case of rape, then certainly something like mm-hmm. that, some traumatic event.
So
that
you don't
happened.
Think just exposure to pornography is necessarily going to be— it's got to be connected to something more.
Yeah, exposure to pornography is certainly an indicator of a value, but if it wasn't brought on
by the parents.
I would say not necessarily. Everybody gets it's what the person does with that. So if a young person indulges in that, what we're talking about here is the outcome that's going to have on the next generation. Because what happens is, what you were born into is the definition of norm. Mm-hmm. That's what's normal. So if a child grows up in a Christian home or a moral home and goes out on his or her own and explores these things, which I guess the point I'm trying to push here is, the likelihood of that happening without some kind of a seed having been planted in that previous generation, it's not likely. Hmm. But if they did and they went out and explored those things, their children would be born into that value system. Mm. that
Don't
value.
You think the whole generation, though, has been born into this value system?
Yeah.
Our society is so coarse. Coarsening the mainstreaming of pornography available everywhere. It wasn't like that when I was growing up.
And that just bears out the fact that every generation kind of pollutes the water further for the next generation.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking a little bit about the family of origin patterns of you know, how that kind of starts. It can start innocently enough, you know, with, you know, to get into the drinking water. It can, you know, the illustration that comes to mind for me, the easiest is a low income family moves into a home. There aren't enough bedrooms. They put up curtains, but the kids can, you know, they come to that age where they're suspicious and they're peeking, watching one another dress now. And then it depends on how the parents might respond to that. Because if it's let go, and a lot of times it is, then that becomes the norm for the next generation. That's the starting point for the next generation. So it takes two or three generations to get into something like incest, and then it takes several generations to get back out of it. And the reason it goes unnoticed in families is, again, as I was saying, what you're born into defines normal. It's kind of the sins of the father passed on those values. Your core, well, how do I know what my value? Your core values are, that's who you are when you're most selfish, or you could put who you are when you think you're alone, or those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. The things you do on a somewhat regular basis that you really would prefer other people don't find out about it. That's your core.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the values that are being passed on the kids. When these things happen, healing has to take place, because you can see in these dire situations or more serious situations, your kids, your young people, maybe you recognize it in yourself, these kinds of behaviors that reflect back on some kind of trauma or sexual trauma earlier. Obviously, we want healing from that.
So you're using the word healing needs to come from this. How about repentance? Where does that, because that's what a lot of the easy answer is, well, you just need to repent. You know, that's the Christian world answer. But you're saying, no, this is a more involved thing that requires some actual healing.
Yeah, yeah. And we're kind of focusing on not the person with an addiction so much as the fallout from the addiction. That needs to be healed. If there's an addiction involved, that's a process of repentance and coming off that addiction, which is quite a process. Mm-hmm. We're talking about here where a family might have a child that's kind of starting to go sideways as an adolescent or something. I mean, in a bizarre way, maybe suicide-like behavior or self-harm behavior or a bipolar diagnosis or something like that. There's a trauma that has caused that.
Mm-hmm.
So forgiveness is quite a journey. We'll talk a little bit about that. When we come back, I guess, from the break here, go into some of the ways that the traditional ways that people approach this, and then kind of some of my own ideas.
Okay, yeah. Causes and healing for sexual trauma, the subject this week on the Sound Mind broadcast with Daniel Pryor. If people are struggling in this area, they've got some family they think that are struggling with this. You are a life coach and a counselor. You have offices in
Kirkland and Edmonds.
And Edmonds. Mm-hmm. How do people get hold of you?
You can call me at 425-778-6169. That's 425-778-6169. And I can also be emailed through my website at BibleBasedCounselor.com.
Back with more of the Sound Mind broadcast with Daniel Pryor in just a moment.
Hi, this is Daniel Pryor, counselor and life coach. Where marriage is concerned, an ounce of prevention is worth a lot more than a pound of cure. Too many couples start off with misconceptions and then wait until the damage is done to seek counsel. As a marriage counselor, I help couples understand both the purpose and process of marriage, and I teach essential tools of communion. If you're married or thinking about marriage and want to get started right, contact me through my website at BibleBasedCounselor.com or call me at 425-778-6169.
Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. And now your host, Daniel Pryor.
Mark Holland on the journey as well today with Daniel Pryor. This week we're looking at the subject of causes and healing for sexual trauma. And you wanted to get into emotional healing and the so-called seven stages of grief.
Well, I wanted to talk a little bit about some of the standard approaches to healing. and, you know, how they work, if they work. And then I wanted to get into some of my own ideas here and try to help people understand what the process really is. And so there are the grieving process, and I was just, you know, I have a question here, is it legit? So that's, you know, like they have, somebody came up with seven stages: denial, guilt, bargaining, depression or reflection, the upward turn or turnaround, reconstruction, working through, acceptance, hope. The thing is that this has become quite cliche, the whole thing of grieving. So we need to understand that grieving is simply, what did I lose and what do I get to keep? It's a process.
I mean, grieving over the fact that you've got sexual trauma. Yeah, I'm trying to connect the two.
Yeah.
How does trauma have to do with grieving?
Well, okay, so in the situation that we'll set it up where the family has discovered that there has been a sexual trauma, and that's what's bothering this young man or this young woman.
Okay.
And so we're going to try to do something about it. Or maybe this person has, as an adult, has found out, and I've seen that happen, has found out or suspected that as a small child that they were abused.
Yeah, you hear that a lot. People realize they do some work and they realize, I was really kind of traumatized sexually, and I didn't even, or I just brushed it under the rug, or even just suppressed the memories of it.
Yeah. And, well, because and that's kind of to the point that we're always grieving things. Just because we don't go through these seven steps doesn't mean we're not grieving. And a lot of people have had these things happen to them as a child, and they know about it, but they've moved on, but not entirely, because it's still affecting the way. Now, they have been grieving, and if they go back to the seven steps, they might say, well, I don't see my process exactly. What did I lose and what do I get to keep? And a lot of times people have handled that over time, and things have been healed without going through a quote-unquote process of it. Time heals things. But if you arrive at that point and you still want to do some processing of it, I'm going to talk about really basically what we're trying to do. And then there are recovery groups, and groups aren't good for everyone. And you know, there are problems with groups, and you'll find out pretty quickly if you go to a group and it's one that's not working, because everybody there isn't well. And it's not a good place to get personal stuff done. It just doesn't work for everyone. So if you've tried a group and it doesn't work for you, you're not alone. They talk about journaling a lot. But I want to stress here that we need something outside of journaling. And so this healing is a process and a journey. And what it looks like depends on how far along you are. So you might at some point discover, or the family might discover, you know, we've been limping along here, hurt, wounded. Now we need to go to get some help. And as I have just said, healing may have been taking place. So don't discount the time. It's not, a lot of people might look at it like all the time we've wasted because we didn't go to counseling or we didn't go through the seven steps. It doesn't work that way. You know, time will heal things. And in some ways, it sorts out for people what really needs work and what probably didn't. You can overfix things.
Okay.
Overanalyze
things. Yeah.
I have talked about, so here's what we're really talking about. So this is kind of my approach to it. We've talked about behavior, or beliefs precede emotions, precede behavior. So I want to kind of tweak that a bit and reframe it. A narrative precedes neurology, precedes behavior. So what we're really doing when we are grieving, or when we're healing, I'm going to talk about healing instead of grieving. When we're healing, what we're really doing is we are changing the neurology that's wrapped around the story. And we'll talk about how we want to do that. But that's basically fundamentally what we're doing. It's healing is not just a phrase. It's associated with narrative and neurology and beliefs. And so you want to start off at whatever point you're at in healing, when you recognize that you need it. You want to start off by sharing. You have to share. That's fundamental to healing. So that's why journaling in and on its own is not helpful. You have to share.
You have to get it out.
You have to heal with the community of people.
At least one person.
Yeah, you have to heal in a community of people, because that's where wholeness is defined. So sharing with the empathetic listeners, that is people who have a physiological response to your pain. They're not just
And this is where an individual counselor like yourself could be helpful as opposed to just a group.
Yeah,
a group everybody seems like they're all they're just competing to see who can.
And they might be listening for selfish reasons.
Totally. So an individual counselor is really there to listen and help.
Now, sometimes family and friends can be helpful, but sometimes they can't, sometimes not, because sometimes they will give unsolicited or unhealthy advice, and that just muddies the pond.
Mm-hmm.
Or another thing that they'll do is they'll take your side and try to empower you by getting angry with you about something. And that's really not we don't want to be motivated by anger. You never heal when you're motivated by anger. Never really, because anger is just, it's a response to fear and shame, and it never heals fear and shame.
So I can't imagine you have these pillows that people hit and things in your office.
No, I'm not into socking pillows. Yeah. Especially not my office. Yeah. So We want empathetic listeners. Sharing is important. The process is one of changing neurology, as I said, changing neurology.
Now, what do you mean by this changing neurology?
Changing neurology that's wrapped around the event by altering the narrative or the storyline. So here's how it might take place. You would share with a person. And see, there's a neurology wrapped around a certain narrative. Now, let's suppose the narrative is, I was all alone, I was helpless, I was molested, or I was hurt. Or another narrative might be that I was disenchanted with my parents because I found out that they weren't perfect. I caught Dad in an affair, or I caught Dad with pornography. And so I was disenchanted. And so there's a neurology wrapped around that, and it's a very painful neurology. It doesn't have to do with dopamine and serotonin. It has to do with some things that are very painful and more associated with shame and fear.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I want to change the storyline. But I can't just – the best way to do that, the only way to do that is with a listener who is empathetic, because what happens is when I share my story and that person understands, the neurology begins to change because it feels good to have someone understand. And now the neurology that's wrapped around that event is now from that point on a different neurology because it's a neurology that includes some things about hope, future rather than just pain in the past. And it's all because I shared with an empathetic listener. And so over time the neurology changes, and therefore the storyline in my brain changes. I mean, I don't look back and see that when this happened I actually had a friend with me. The memory is still the memory, but the neurology has changed because I've shared my story with the person, and now the recollection of that story includes this person. The neurological recollection, the neurology attached to that memory now includes the empathy that I received here. So now we're beginning to change. We're beginning to change the neurology that's wrapped around the memory, and that's going to help me to kind of sort out the facts of the event from various perspectives. It's going to help me to de-traumatize the emotion because it's going to give me a sense of personal value. This person's listening to me because of personal value. Now you might argue you can get value, control, and power by getting angry and stomping on the person that hurt you and never letting. But as I said before, anger has never healed fear and shame. All it may distance you from those people, but it's going to distance you from other people too. You can't be a whole person if you're distanced from people. Personhood is in the community of that. Persons. You'll be able to, at that point, you'd be able to, you expand your personality. This is all about expanding personality. Again, I think I mentioned in the previous part of the show that people want to hear more on this personality. You can go to the podcast, BibleBasedCounselor.com podcast, go into the back podcast. Sometime late last year or mid last year, I did a couple of shows on personality disorders. Those would be interesting to combine with this and understand
As you change this neurology, that's where forgiveness begins and can happen.
That's where forgiveness begins. There's another podcast that I've done on forgiveness, but just briefly, forgiveness is not just writing it off. Forgiveness is getting to the place where you actually can give of yourself, and it goes along with forgetting or for receiving. So there's no knowing what that finished process is going to look like. And this is where people make the mistake that they kind of have a, you know, they have sort of have a fairy tale ending to their process. We just have to accept where we are at a given point. And, you know, this is where I'm at. Not regretting what I believe I've lost, but doing the best with that I can with what I have and move on. And again, I wanted to stress just before I close here that to be motivated by those who encourage you, try not to be motivated by the person who's harmed you. That is, don't. It's a dangerous thing to compete and succeed just because somebody did you dirty.
Mm-hmm.
That only takes you further into shame and fear.
Yeah. So
you need to be motivated by people who encourage you.
Okay, great stuff this week. Causes and healing for sexual trauma. And if people, though, have been traumatized, they've got something, and they thought that they were over something, but they found that they need some help, how do they get in touch with you?
You can call me at 425-778-6169. People also email me through the website at BibleBasedCounselor.com, offices in Kirkland and Edmond.
Life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor, another broadcast of the Sound Mind Show here on KCIS.
You've been listening to Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. For more information about Daniel Pryor and his services, visit BibleBasedCounselor.com. Daniel has offices in Kirkland and Edmonds. To make an appointment, call 425-778-6169. Be sure to tune in each Tuesday afternoon at 1 p.m. for Sound Mind with Daniel Pryor.